Hey guys, if you want updates on our latest episodes, then be sure to subscribe to the Film Colossus podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen. Also, if you'd like to support the show and hear episodes ad-free, then subscribe to our Patreon page at patreon.com/filmcolossus.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
My name is Chris Lambert.
And my name is Travis Bean. And on today's episode, we gush over Celine Song's debut film, Past Lives. We discuss her atmospheric approach to a story about diverging paths, and how she captures that inescapable desire to romanticize what could have been. Letting go of that feeling isn't easy, but necessary for realizing our best selves. Basically, get ready for some existential reflection in this episode.
Travis, I'm so excited about this one.
I'm excited. I'm excited for two reasons. One, I know you really love this movie.
Yes.
And regardless of how I feel about a movie, I like when you are passionate about something. I can hear you talk about it. And B, the second reason I'm excited is, and I think it's just become a trend in this show, that you have no idea how I feel about a movie because I refuse to talk about it beforehand. And I think you're slightly terrified.
I never know what to expect because when I think I know your tastes, I don't.
Exactly. I like to change it up.
I know, there's always some curveball, except for Vanilla Sky. I knew watching Vanilla Sky that you would be going crazy over it. But with ones like this, I can't tell if it's going to be something that is an arrow to your heart or like sets you off on a just disgruntled tirade.
Well, let's ease into this a little bit. First, let's lay the foundation. Let's set the table and all that jazz. Chris, what was your experience with this movie? How did you first hear about it? And when did you first see it? And how did you first feel about it?
So I first heard about it walking through the Alamo Drafthouse. They have a hallway that tends to have at least a portion of the wall covered in like a singular poster, but repeated like 46 times on the wall. And Past Lives was the one that they were pushing. And I can't remember if I heard something about it at Sundance before that, but I was seeing the poster and remember hearing a little bit of talk around that time of Past Lives, like a great movie. It's a great movie. And of course the Draft House had the trailer going. And I wasn't that excited at first because I was chalking it up to a typical kind of love triangle movie. And just from the poster, from the trailer, I thought it was going to be maybe a little more one-dimensional than what it ended up being. And I almost, because of that, missed it while it was doing its limited theatrical run. So I think it took me maybe like 3 weeks or a month after it came out at the Draft House to finally just be like, you know what, I'll go see it. And then I spent, you know, an hour and a half crying and feeling the existential gut punch of what I think is an instant masterpiece, which is amazing to say for a first film.
Yeah.
And I just told everybody for the next month to go see the movie. And some people, I got like a few people to go and see it and they all came back like, oh my goodness, what an experience. So it's been nice recently since it just came out on video on demand that more people have been seeing it and the hype for it has been growing. I'm so excited for when it actually hits streaming services rather than being, you know, $20 to buy right now. just because I think this is going to be such a beloved film for a long time.
Yeah, I think a big part of that is, well, I'm curious, the people you told to watch this movie, is there a general age range for these people?
Early 30s, late 30s.
Yeah, 30s.
Yeah.
I think if you're in your 30s, like, at least the intent of this movie and the themes and all that, like, they're going to hit.
Right. I mean, especially given the fact that Celine Song, this is such an autobiographical movie. Yeah. Like, she grew up in Seoul. She moved to Toronto, went to school in New York City. Like, everything that happened in the movie pretty much happened to her.
Yeah, right.
But that means she's the same age as us, right? So when she's, like, in college and on Skype, we were in college at that time and, like, using Skype in that way. And the sound effects of it, the look of it, just there's so much of it that kind of resonates with, you know, I did go to college in New York, but still there's something about it all that feels very familiar and of the age.
Yeah.
That made this movie, like, hit. I'm a year older than her.
Oh, wow.
She's born in 88.
That makes her 35.
Yeah.
Oh, she's my age. So yeah, I mean, that all checks out. I mean, so when I first saw the trailer, it wasn't even that I had a negative reaction to it, but I will admit I have some trepidation about, like, A24. I think they're great, and they help a lot of great filmmakers make movies, and they at least make, like, different kind of movies than what we're typically used to from just, like, mainstream blockbusters or, like, bigger independent movies. But I don't like a lot of their movies too. So, like, sometimes when I see an A24 trailer, I'm like, there's, like, a 50-50 chance I hate this. And on top of that, it felt very just, it wasn't even like the love triangle aspect of it for me. It just felt very familiar in that kind of independent way. Like, I'd seen this movie like 15,000 times at film festivals we've been to, you know?
Yeah.
It kind of just had that general, I mean, it's hard to really get it from a trailer, but the general mood and feel of it. But I honestly, I don't know if I really had very much intention to watch it, period, until we decided to cover it on the show. But I was getting a little ramped up and ready to watch it because I knew you really liked it. And I think at first when I started watching it, I was a little like this is going through all the motions like I expect. Like, it kind of has a Moonlight feel, you know, where it's going in like three different like segments of someone's life. And I had this feeling of like, I've seen this before. Like, this isn't doing anything like that new or interesting, like we're just watching like two little kids. But pretty quickly I was pulled into it, and I feel like I said, like, the trailer doesn't properly capture the mood and feel of something. Like, it's hard to cut together like what plays out over the course of 2 hours, and I felt very pulled into the energy and outlook of this movie. And I think that's pretty rare these days for me to be like this entranced by something that doesn't have like a big blown up plot. Like, it's one of those movies that when I think about like my favorite movies, like, this is in line with a lot of those where it just kind of steeps in something and exists in a feeling, which that's a very ambitious thing to do when making a movie. Like, that's not easy to pull off, and it's not easy to like make someone just feel like they're sitting there with people for 2 hours. But that was this movie, and yeah, I cried several times. Like, my wife cried harder than I did. I think it really hit her. It has, that's why I asked about the age, because like, to me, this movie speaks exactly to where I am in my life, because it's easy to choose direction when you're younger. Mm-hmm. It's to feel confident in your decisions, to believe you're choosing the best path for yourself. But at some point, like, you realize those days are gone and that, like, you can't really, like, keep changing paths constantly once you're 35. I mean, look, I still have a lot of life left, but I guess what I mean is the feeling starts to weigh a little heavier, that you start feeling like there is less time to change the course of your life, or you feel more aware of your past decisions and where they've led you. It's just a very intense feeling that kind of steeps and sets over the course of time and becomes heavier and heavier, just like inherently. Like, you just feel it from day to day. It isn't like something that just hits you one day. Some days it does. Some days you're a mess and you're crying because you think about all the decisions you've made. But in general, like, that heavy feeling that weighs on you, that's not an easy feeling to capture. And I think this movie really does it.
Yeah, that's like the thing that hit me, was when you finally realize that the relationship dynamic is just the vehicle for the deeper conversation about the existential, like, weight of the decisions that we've made throughout our life, and having to accept those decisions and what it means to reach a point where you do have to say, like, this is who I am, this is the path that I've chosen, rather than spiraling so strongly. And, you know, realistically, people do spiral, and realistically you can still make big changes and shifts, but I feel like this movie is getting almost at, like, an ideal way of thinking, where you don't have to second guess the things that are good. And even though there are costs that come along the way that could have been equally as good, or maybe even better, you have to be happy with the fact that you're, like, happy.
Mm, totally. Yeah. I mean, sorry, keep going.
This is doing the same thing as La La Land, right? But better.
The same thing, except that it's done well.
Yeah, I mean, it's missing the whole Hollywood aspect of Hollywood crushes you, and this is the cost of Hollywood. But the path that Nora and Haesung go on is very similar to the path that what are their character names in?
Gosh, we just watched it and I don't remember.
I know. Emma Stone and Ryan Gosling go on in that film, where ultimately they had a fork in the road. Their lives took them in a direction that was apart, and they have to really reconcile with the fact that they're where they want to be, but they don't have each other.
Right.
And what that means. But it's, the movie doesn't actually give you the weight of that and exploration of that. It just sets up, like, there's a feeling there. Yeah. Past Lives is that feeling set up, explored, and reckoned with.
Right.
Totally. And it's amazing.
Yeah, gosh. Just more chances for Travis to shit on Damien Chazelle. But, like, you're so right. Like, I kind of, this movie made me realize this, and it is part of me, that I really, really hate, gosh, I hate to be that, I don't want to be that strong in my language, but the instinct to romanticize something you could have been, like something, like in this movie, like a relationship you could have been in, romanticizing that to the extent that, like, all you do is think about what that would have been and who you could have been and how great it could have been. That's like, that's no way to live, you know, like, that is a, that is a recipe for disaster. And if the longer you're like that, the more you're not living your life. the more you're not recognizing, as you said, like all the goodness in your life and all the great things around you and what you've built, like you're not giving yourself enough credit if you think like that. Like you've done amazing things. You've achieved incredible heights. If you've achieved happiness with someone, even if things are sometimes not great, even if you're in a low place, like thinking about something you've built with somebody, like that's difficult to do, but it's necessary to do. And something like La La Land, like it feels cheap in that way, that it just like toys with the idea of like, what if, instead of steeping in like what is and what we've become and what place we're in, like what kind of way is that to end a movie? Which makes the ending of Past Lives so incredible, because you kind of recognize her at the end of the movie tempting that feeling. Like she's standing there with Hae-sun, and she's almost, it almost seems like she's hoping he'll kiss her. And Hae-sun has to be the one who like sees her. He sees who she is. He recognizes that she is someone who leaves, that had to go, that had to discover who she was. And she made all of the necessary decisions she needed in her life to become who she is, this very strong woman. And to take that away from her would be irresponsible, would be a cheap way to end this movie. And instead, it's a very real ending that recognizes the way people are and the places they need to go and the tough decisions they need to make. And one of those tough decisions is like not looking back, like just recognizing what you've done and moving forward and like making it better and better and better.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank? The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. It's all about panoramic volume and fully fanned out lashes. With its tapered brush, the new Panorama Mascara catches every single lash, giving you the false lash look without any of the hassle. Say goodbye to clumps and flakes, because this mascara is specially formulated to resist them all day with up to 24-hour wear. And the best part? It performs better than Luxe mascaras at only a fraction of the cost. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
Yeah. We did talk about it. I don't know if you read the article, but the article, like the guide on the site.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I perused it.
There's that detail at the end when Nora and Hae-sung leave Nora's apartment and they're walking to Hae-sung's Uber. Mm-hmm. And Celine Song talked specifically about the fact that she had them walking from the right side of the screen to the left side of the screen,
right,
in that profile shot, because it represented a timeline and how time always moves left to right in forward progression. So going from right to left means heading into the past. So that walk that they go on symbolizes them essentially walking into the past, walking towards what they could have been, and having that moment of the final In Young past lives conversation. And that he then pivots to maybe in the next life and gets in the taxi, and that makes her walk back, which having the walk back is so good. It's those little choices like that that I love so much, because there's so much emotion in that moment, where if you were just to cut from her, from Hae-sung getting in the taxi to then her arriving back at the porch, you don't get that stoop, I guess. You don't get that moments of emotion that wells up and over her, and the weight of her then walking
totally
from the left back to the right, from the past back to her present and into her future with Arthur. It's little choices like that that demonstrate the nuance and depth that this film has, that just make it so dynamic and fascinating. And like that reunion with Arthur at that point and having that little bit of a gap where she's independent between both of them and then runs back to who she is with him. It's just beautiful.
That's a fantastic detail. I was reading the interview she did with Filmmaker Magazine, and she was referencing, I mean, she's a playwright, so she's done a lot of plays and this is her first movie, but she's a cinephile and knows, seen a lot of movies. And that does seem like a typical, I know Hitchcock did that a lot. He played a lot with right and left. So that's awesome to see somebody utilizing that. It's done great in that scene because I don't actively recognize it while I'm watching it. But as you say everything you just said, and I think back to it, and I'm like, I feel like I did recognize it, you know, like just subconsciously almost. Everything you just described, I think plays perfectly into that idea of Enyun and how it's discussed in the movie. Like, it's given a very mythological feel when they discuss it. Like, they're talking about literal past lives and people you used to know. But I love how it plays out in this movie because it basically just becomes a metaphor for, like, this one and only life you live. Enyun is like, it's you looking back and thinking about like this life you could have had with somebody. And I'm sure everybody's done this where you think about like this one decision you could have made and like the completely different life you would have led because of it. Like you completely different, like everything in your life, like nothing's the same. You're in a different city. You're with a different person. You have a different job. And because of all those things, like you have a completely different outlook on life. You have a different political leaning. You like different kinds of movies, like all these different lives you could lead. It's all based on the people you meet and decisions you make when you come across those people and the kind of energy you share with those people. You know, something like Nora deciding to stop talking to Haesun over Skype. Something as simple as that completely changed her life. Like, think of who she would have been at that writer's retreat if she was still talking to Haesun. She would have not gotten with Arthur, and that would have never led to that discussion in the bed where Arthur's expressing like all these things he doesn't know about her, wished he knew. Like, I just that whole idea of Enyun, and then thinking about that last scene, it's like she's walking through that, the Enyun of her life and like what she could have been and walking back to what is. It's just such a heavy, I keep saying heavy, but it is. It's heavy in that way that like it forces this character to like come back to where she is and be like, no, this is it. Like, this is what you have. And like, you have to make the best of it right now.
Yeah. I love too the little bit of, we had recently had the podcast episode on Chungking Express, and there was something kind of familiar in the early portions of that movie, how they keep showing people kind of bumping into each other and the spark and connection
that's
kind of there. So having Enyun and them mentioning, you know, just if you bump into a stranger on the street, that's a sign that Enyun exists. And how they joke about how Nora might have been a bird and Haesung the branch in a past life. Just something as simple as that being the foundation for the connection that builds up between two people. It just struck me as like Chungking Express is already one of the most brilliant movies about romance. And I feel like Past Lives immediately jumps into that category as well, but has the extra layer of not being about romance at all,
right?
In so many ways. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to agree with you that it's kind of not really a romantic movie. Like, even thinking about Haesun and his, you know, he clearly wants to be with Nora and he's come here to make it work. But the whole time he's there, like, his journey in that moment is recognizing like who she is and why she needs to be where she is and how he can't fuck that up. And that he has to go then make the best of like who he is and like what he has been building. Like, it's just a movie about living, really.
Yeah. I love to when he says, it's a semi-devastating line, like a little bit of I guess his one moment of revenge, in quotes, where he tells her that she's someone who leaves.
Yeah.
Because to Arthur, she's someone who stays.
Yeah.
And that dynamic and how who we are to different people and how we behave in different situations gets at the, I guess, how multifaceted people are. The simple example is just, you know, you're a different person with your best friend than you are with your parents, than you are with your coworkers, than you are with your significant other. We have these different aspects of our personality that come out in each of those situations. But this movie takes it to another level in terms of applying that idea to a much more long-term state of being of who Nora would have been with Hae-sung, or just who she was in her interactions with Hae-sung, someone who leaves.
Yeah.
And what would it have meant if she had been with him? Would there have always been this flightiness and distance? And is the fact that she had that dynamic with Hae-sung exactly what made her so consistent for Arthur?
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. That, I mean, you are right that when he says you are somebody who leaves, that she was that way with Hae-sung, but not with Arthur. That is technically true because obviously she's still with Arthur. But I think it does, that statement generally speaks to her personality and how she's someone, she's very strong, she's very independent, and she felt tied down by Hae-sung, by Korea, which is why she moves forward as a child and moves forward in her 20s with Hae-sung. Like, she feels the need to distance herself from these things in order to become who she wants to be. So that informs her personality. And so, but with Arthur, she's there, she's with him. But I do think that statement and that general picture of her explains why Arthur is, I don't know if he's crying, but he's very emotional in bed with her. And essentially describing, like, I feel like I don't know you sometimes. And sometimes I feel like I don't even know if you love me. Like, there's something about her that I don't even know if it's necessarily like there's always one foot out the door. And like, maybe she could leave Arthur if she wanted to pursue something else. But I think it's more that she felt the need to project this image of strength for so long and to be independent for so long, that she maybe doesn't know how to be with someone, like, completely. And at the end of the movie, she finally has that recognition, like, this moment where Hae-sung's not going to be with her. He's not going to kiss her and, like, ruin everything she has with Arthur and force her to walk back to the right, to the life she lives, and be with him. And that's the moment she starts crying, and she's so vulnerable in a way that we probably haven't seen her the entire movie.
Yeah, it's almost like because she didn't have that closure with Hae-sung, there's always something in the back of her mind about, well, maybe. And that, well, right, maybe causes her to not necessarily, even though she's living with Arthur, married to Arthur, been with him for 12 years, and it seems has given no sign of ever wanting to leave or anything else, but there's just that vibe of, well, you know,
yeah,
could it happen? Like, could there still be something with Hae-sung? That's always just been a little bit of a splinter, mm-hmm, in the relationships, and whether or not either of them were aware of it. And it's something that with Hae-sung coming to visit becomes a lot more explicit and allows them to really express these things and grow as a couple. Like, they go through something together and support one another and their vulnerabilities and learn something more about their relationship. It's making me tear up thinking about about it. I don't know if, I guess, you've been with Lauren for such a long time. I have had that example of where I was like dating people in college or have been talking to somebody, and like there were times, you know, you talk with somebody and like you're flirting a little bit, but they're in a relationship, mm-hmm. but you don't know that person. So you're kind of like, well, I'm not going to do anything, but, you know, we're flirting. And then you meet the person and you're just like, oh, okay, they're awesome. Like, I'm going to change the entire dynamic here. Like, still going to be friends, but, like, I have a whole different view of this. That happened a couple times in college. And then even, you know, there were a couple times where I was talking to somebody and there wasn't anything like committed going on, but they were talking to multiple people, mm-hmm. and I was the one picked. And then I'd meet the guy and just be like, oh, he's awesome. Yeah. Mm. This is great. Like, yeah. There have been a few like friends or just moments throughout my life where I've kind of experienced this in a far less intense way, which made what was portrayed on screen, it like jived with what I had experienced, and made the line where Haesung's like, yeah, you know, you're great, hit pretty hard.
yeah that's I mean, there's the interview with that Celine Song did with Filmmaker Magazine. She had a really great moment where she was talking about the opening scene and how they're sitting in the bar, and you know, you hear the people like talking about them and just wondering like who each of them are to each other, and she turns and looks at them, and that Celine Song says like that actually happened, like she actually made eye contact with somebody and then had this very overwhelming feeling that they were talking about her and wondering about her. Which is a very strange thing to have happen. I imagine, like, I don't know if I've ever had that happen to me, but that is as you reach the age of 35 and, you know, and that kind of thing happens at a moment in your life where you are wondering, you know, you're sitting between your childhood sweetheart and the man you're with, and you are thinking about like who you could have been. And this person is over here thinking about who is this person. She has this line, I think the movie is about that sort of ineffable relationship or connection we have sometimes with someone that doesn't have a label. And I think that there is this pressure to put a label on something, to make something concrete, to give it a brand, to recognize it, to say like, this is that. But life's not like that. Like everything is fluid. Like things are complicated. Like, it obviously it could be something as simple as like, this is my wife and like I love her and I'm with her, but all of the little tangential threads that come from that relationship that stretch to all of these other relationships and situations from your life, and then adding on top of that like all of the ways your life could have gone and all of these like ghost threads, I just thought that was really interesting way to approach a movie and a great way to start a movie, that you're tasked, basically her task of the movie is to define who this person is that you're looking at, which is an impossible thing to do. And I think that's part of the reason why the movie really hits, why the ending is so emotional, for both the character, but the director as well, and anybody watching the movie who connects with this stuff, is that like that feeling that overwhelms you, that makes you cry when you have this moment of reckoning with who you actually are and being in the moment of who you are, that's really tough, and you can't put a label on it, and that's, I think, really hard, for a hard pill to swallow for people.
Yeah, it very much can be. It's heavy. I mean, I don't know if she mentioned it in the Filmmaker Magazine interview. I know in the press materials that were on the A24 site, she had mentioned that was actually, for her, the genesis of the movie was that moment, right, in particular, and realizing in that moment, oh, there's a movie here. Like, I need to explore this. And that's going to be the very beginning of the movie.
Yeah. And in the magazine, she talked about how she's a playwright, by nature and is used to exploring these kinds of stories just through the written word and on stage, but that looking through this kind of story just required a different medium, A, because they're going between different ages and settings and all that. It's just easier to do with a movie. But beyond that, like capturing that feeling, like that feels like an impossible task to construct an aesthetic, a mood and feel that just captures not knowing like the direction of your life or wondering about what the direction of life could have been and then having to deal with like where it's at. I think that's just one thing that makes this movie shine and makes it stand out from a lot of the movies I was comparing it to before watching it, you know, just like thinking like, oh, it's a typical festival independent kind of movie. It has a very ethereal feel, you know, it constantly feels like that opening scene that we are standing on the outside of something and we are intimately involved with this person's life that we don't know. It's just a very odd and interesting mood to construct.
Yeah, I'd love to. I mean, coming full circle is such a basic technique that it can often feel kind of cliche, especially to me at this point. I become pretty, pretty weary and wary of it just because you kind of know where the movie's going to come back to, which takes out some of the excitement to me when it's not done well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm thinking of like multiple movies just this year that have done it. There is something unique in how it's used in Past Life just for the fact that it does have that external perspective to the characters where you feel like you're on the outside of it all looking at them. And then over the course of the movie, you're on the inside, which creates a whole movement to the viewer perspective.
Right.
Where you're not just at a distance because you're new to the movie and don't know what's going on. It legitimately places you at a distance formally through having the camera in the perspective of the people looking at the three of them. And then by the time you finally get to that scene, you're weaving in and out between the characters from the camera being close to them and being part of the dialogue that you couldn't hear before. It's just the little use of the formal reinforcements of it that takes what is a basic kind of cliche thing to do at this point. Because it's effective, it does give the movie a sense of beginning and end that lets audiences feel like they've completed something. So it's a safety valve in a lot of ways, but it manages to explore this or use that technique in a way that feels a lot more fresh and powerful to me and earned in a way.
Yeah.
So I liked that.
Yeah. Everything you just said, it does make me, it makes me think about a lot of moments in the movie where, I mean, especially the moments where Nora and Hae-sun meet back up after 12 years and any moment they share in public, there is this perspective we have of like looking at these two people. And in the beginning, we see them from the perspective of people who truly don't know them. And you can't help but like have that feeling throughout the movie. Like at this point, we do know them, but they are out in public with a lot of other people and people are looking at them this way. It does completely shift the dynamic. And there's a bit of a tension in their relationship in that way. Like I was thinking about it when they went to just like a pier, you know, like they're looking out over the water. And I think this is very purposely done. All around them are couples, like people being very intimate. And you could look at any of these couples and do the exact same thing you did at the beginning of this movie. And anybody standing near this area, like, or any of those couples could look over at Nora and Hae-sun and be wondering about them. And you're right. Like that whole energy that exists throughout the movie to have it then come in at the end. Like, think about the end, and if you were standing across the street and you saw Nora walk up to Arthur and just start crying. Could be a million reasons for that. And the fact that we have now got to sit through this journey with her and understand how she's gotten to this point, like, it makes it so much heavier.
It really, really does. Man. And it's funny how, I'm just thinking how good of a job they do with the portioning of the film, because it's surprising going back to it. And because when you see it in theaters, you don't have timestamps, right?
Right.
But watching it video on demand, to be able to see that Nora and Haesung reconnect at like the 53-minute mark.
Mm-hmm.
And the credits don't roll until like a minute 39 or an hour 39.
Mm-hmm.
So you really have like a 40 minutes of the film, like more than half. Or not more than half, but like nearly half of the movie being their adult period. But those opening chapters as kids, Skype,
yeah,
meeting Arthur and like the relationship with Arthur, it feels like such a long journey through all of that, that I'm really glad this is the math portion of the...
I love it. Brought to you by math.
The episode. I'm really glad that the film took the time to not only develop each of those sections, but to really let us feel the weight of what it meant as adults to have this and not just be like we saw in La La Land, like kind of this 10-minute thing that's very brief and goes full circle in very simple, cheesy ways.
So sorry, Damien Chazelle.
He did such a cool thing today too. It's the start of the Venice Film Festival, and he's coming out with like the WGA pin on and talking about how it's day 121 of the writer's strike. Like, good on him. He's awesome. Going to continue to support Damien Chazelle. It's just I will critique the things that I don't like.
Hey, you liked Babylon.
Yeah,
I didn't. I fucking hated it. Anyway. God, I don't even remember where we were at before we started talking about Damien Chazelle.
Just the movie taking the time of those sections. And I mean, most of that was just how powerful of an impact Arthur made on the film in a very brief amount of time. I wasn't sure if the movie was going to accomplish... Like, they set up the dynamic between Nora and Haesung so well that there's part of me when I was watching it just being like, how could they ever make the other guy compelling?
And she talked about that in the interview, actually.
Really?
Because she talks about the whole just becoming a director. I mean, obviously, she had a lot of experience with writing characters and dealing with actors on the stage, but... there's something different about a movie, like, and she talked about it. If the character for Arthur comes in and say it's like this really popular actor who has like a strong presence, you know, like you're going to fucking hate this guy. You're not going to be rooting for Nora and this guy to get together. Like he's going to have like an energy about him that is overwhelming. It that is like trying to overpower what Nora and Haesung had. But like, John Magaro, that's not really the case with him. He has a very, like, simple, like, everyday feel about him. And I don't mean that at all. It's like, it's not like he's somebody who can't act. Like, it feels very purposely done. Like, his almost detachment in a way, which I think plays perfectly into his character when he's in bed and describing like he wishes he knew her better. Like there that is that energy about him that he's somebody who is just kind of, he's there. He's a good guy. He is probably better for Nora than like she would ever have dreamed. And then, or that Haesung would have ever realized. Like there's just something about his character that brings such quietness and clarity to Nora's life. That's in casting someone like that is, you know, that's not an easy thing to do. And she took a lot of time and care to find the right person for it.
Yeah. I had never seen him in anything. I don't think.
No, I don't think so.
I didn't recognize him. And there was just something, like, he embodied the character so well and brought that a different presence than Haesung.
Yes.
But something that's very calming, very supportive, very, I don't know, familiar, to where you could just feel the way in which she felt loved and supported. And I don't know, there was something just very charming about their dynamic and different than what she had with Haesung. Like, it didn't have the same magnetism, but it didn't need to.
Yes, his approach to the character is completely necessary for the movie, because, like, you know, Tae-yu, he has this ability to switch between, like, boyish charm, like that little smile he has, to, like, stone-faced, hard-line masculinity. Like in that scene where Nora just keeps going, like, he's so Korean. Like, everything she describes about him, like, he's both, like, this person who wants to open up and be with her, but, like, he can't escape who he is and who he's been bred to be. And then you have Greta Lee, who, she has this incredible ability to waver between, like, self-reliant, like, super strong, and super vulnerable, and someone who needs help finding direction. Like, John Magaro really needs to be... Everything you said is perfect. Like, the energy he brings is a perfect tangentially to, like, what they're each bringing to the movie, and somebody who kind of, like, he kind of grounds everything. He's somebody who brings Nora back to reality and makes them realize, like, the situation she's in and what needs to be done to preserve who she is and what she's built.
You mentioning the performance vibes, it just made me, I was so blown away by Tae-yu and Greta Lee and how much they felt like 20 somethings.
Oh yeah.
During the college section,
they really did. Yeah,
it just, I mean, from the body language to the enthusiasm and the difference in just their whole being.
That's so
from
true.
One to the other,
it does was... make me think about, like, when you have, like, that kind of flirtatious relationship with someone in your 20s, and, like, you meet up with them once in a while, and there's kind of this fleeting happiness and, like, nothing can go wrong kind of feeling, you know?
Yeah. And then when they're adults and they meet up, just the...
Everything shit.
What? Yeah, what masterful performances to be able to capture each of those periods so brilliantly, but not have them feel... over the top. Feels such, like, natural aging.
Yeah, from one to the next. It feels very lived in that way.
Yeah. Like, when you've talked on previous episodes about wanting to steep in a feeling, steep with characters, to, like, be in a vibe and atmosphere with them. This movie definitely captures that.
I think that's why it really hit me. The moment that made me cry hardest, I don't know if this happened to you, but it's when Haesung and Nora first meet up. Not as kids, but as 34, 35-year-olds. And they just stand there for a while and look at each other. And Haesung just keeps saying, like, I don't know what to do. Like, that was such... Like, that had to be from Celine Song's life. Like, that had to have happened. Like that seems like an insane thing to say to me. But I also, like, completely recognize that feeling. And just, like, as that was happening, he said it, like, 3 times. He's like, I don't know what to say or, like, do with myself. And there was, like, no conversation happening. And they have to, like, hug twice to, like, they have to hug a second time to be like, look, like, we're here. We're together. Like, let's just, this is it. I don't know. That really got to me.
It was a great, so much had built up to that point. Like, so much that it's very cathartic when that happens. And then very... human, right? Yes. As you're saying, in the reaction rather than stylized or idealized.
Man, it just is, it's those moments between characters, like every conversation they have, and even that small conversation Haesung and Arthur have at the bar when Nora's gone, like, so lived in. Like, you're just to be so present at the DP, the cinematographer for this movie, Shabir, gosh, I should have learned how to say his name, Shabir, Kirshner. He said, some cinematographers believe, and I share this opinion, that the less a viewer is conscious of the camera when watching the film, the better, so they aren't pulled out of whatever story or environment they're in. And that's so true. And that's, again, an incredibly difficult thing to pull off. Like, that can only happen as a result of, like, lots of conversations and defining what the filmic language of your movie is. And, like, they clearly did it for this.
Yeah, which, I mean, that might be one of the reasons why you tend to not like long shots so much is yeah. because it makes you so much more aware yeah. of the camera.
Wow, you're right. Thank you for psychoanalyzing me.
Where that's the reason why I hate cuts, because yeah, right. that is what makes me aware of the camera and the artificiality of everything.
That's true. It's yeah, I guess it's kind of a song and dance there. My whole thing about the long takes is that my example in Babylon was like, as you're moving through the crowd, it feels like Damien Chazelle like points at somebody. He's like, this is the moment you jump on the elephant's back. Like, it all feels so timed in a way that I'm like, I don't buy it.
Yeah.
And it doesn't feel natural. As opposed to like the quick cuts. I guess you're right about that in a sense, but maybe I'm more, when I see like a well-executed compilation of cuts, like, maybe I'm just more impressed by like the artistry of that, and that someone's able to build like this moving, this compilation of images that evoke a specific feeling or push a certain idea. I don't know, there's something about that I guess just speaks to me.
I remember the first time that it ever pissed me off was in late high school, I think. I had watched one of the Pierce Brosnan Bond movies.
Die Another Day.
It's either, what is it? World's Not Enough and Die Another Day were the ones.
Those were the last two. Is that, or is World Not Enough the, I think that is the third one that Brosnan did.
Which one has the boat chase?
Speedboat. Is that Die Another Day?
I don't think it's Die Another Day, is it? Eh. Because I feel like Die Another Day had the sword fight.
And that was the one with where they're like in Antarctica, right? Is that it?
I think so. Maybe Tomorrow Never Dies was the one
we're
with
just
the...
sitting here.
Yeah, it's one of them. I should just do boat.
Boat chase. Oh, it's World Is Not Enough, yeah.
Okay. There's the boat chase. I remember sitting there going, like, you have two people on speedboats and every shot is just of their face. It's just medium close up after medium close up after medium close up. I'm not getting any sense of action, perspective, scope. And when it did maybe cut to something wider, it immediately cut to something else. And I was just so angry.
Yeah,
at the editing of that sequence, which is why I loved Casino Royale so much, because I had that in mind. And then Casino Royale, it's not like that movie has a bajillion long takes, but it's just the average length of each shot is much higher than what you get in your typical Hollywood action movie.
Well, I will say, Chris, that Martin Campbell directed Casino Royale, and that's the guy who directed Goldeneye, which is fucking awesome.
I've never seen Goldeneye.
Oh my god, wow. Goldeneye, and I mean Tomorrow Never Dies is pretty good, but Goldeneye's the best.
I remember liking Die Another Day decently enough, but
Die Another Day sucks.
Just because there was a sword fight, that was, and the Madonna song.
Well, I guess if that's the height of movies for you, then yeah, that was a pretty awesome movie.
Sigmund Freud. I love that she just throws Madonna in the middle of the song for Die Another Day, just throws in Sigmund Freud.
Man, Madonna had a better song for the Austin Power movies than she did for Die Another Day.
That's a shame. Okay, I'll have to watch Goldeneye. I'll have to watch all of...
Oh, man, yeah. Gotta watch Goldeneye.
I've never seen Edge of Darkness. I saw Green Lantern. Foreigner, did it watch? Protege, Memory, no. Legend of Zorro.
He directed Green Lantern?
Yeah.
Oh, I've never seen that, actually. That feels like a Travis movie waiting to happen.
That feels like that is a Travis movie waiting to happen. Anyway.
Wow.
So the shots in this were nice.
yeah, roundabout way of saying that.
But the shot that jumped out to me the most, my favorite like moment in this movie, was during the college years. The camera keeps returning to the curtain / window in Nora's room. And there's something just very evanescent, ethereal, as you like to say, about the shot. And I loved how when she tells Hae-sung that she can't talk with him anymore, it goes back to the window and you see the sun kind of setting and darkening and the window darkens.
Yeah.
And it's just this small moment, unnecessary, you know, to the story. I think a lot of Hollywood productions would probably say you should cut that for time. But it's one of those things that as a A24 film, as an art film, independent film, you can kind of get away with having just the few extra seconds.
Right.
And that to me was honestly one of the things I think about the most from this movie. And that I think about all the time, like that was so nice, because the next day, the shot that we get is of the window and sunrise.
Yeah.
And that's when she goes off and ends up meeting Arthur. And doesn't she see him for the first time out the window?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just a nice little like motif that
the passing of time
runs through that section. Yeah.
Yeah. I love it. It feels like there are a lot of those kinds of shots in this movie. And as we've talked throughout this podcast, like that is kind of a tropish thing to do, I guess, to have this moment that so clearly recalls, like, you know, the passing of time, like the dawn of something new. Like movies do that all the time. But the problem isn't that movies do this thing all the time. It's that movies don't do it well or in an interesting way or present it in a new way or attach it to some energy that has been built throughout the movie that where you don't even notice that it feels cheesy and familiar. You just recognize how powerful it is. Those moments are just like constantly happening in this movie.
Yeah, just throughout start to finish. What a movie.
Yeah, good stuff. Do you have an absolute favorite moment? Was it that shot?
I love profile shots. I don't think they get used enough. So when they're walking down the sidewalk, I think is my favorite part of the film. Yeah. Just because it's my favorite shots and it's such kind of a powerful, interesting moment.
That does feel like a thing of the past. Like that's not really used much anymore.
No, I feel like I didn't see it, or the first time I noticed it and realized how cool it was Pan's Labyrinth. It's right after the general shoots the doctor. Spoiler to anybody who hasn't seen Pan's Labyrinth. But the doctor goes walking away and he's walking towards the camera, and then it cuts from being in that kind of face-to-face perspective to the wider profile, and you just see the current or the general and his kind of soldiers on the right side of the screen, and then the doctor on the left side of the screen drops to his knees and falls down, and it feels very Renaissance painting. It's so cool to me.
Yeah.
And you don't see it often, but it's still my favorite thing when you do get it.
Yeah, that's cool. I would say I have two favorite things about this movie. One, I already talked about, just like that moment Nora and Hae-sung first walk up to each other in New York City and their energy. I just like, I mean, Celine Song talked about in that interview and how going from stage to the screen, that you really move forward with the things you know how to do. And what she knew already was character, was empathy, was working with actors to evoke a certain feeling. And that is just so clear in this scene. like their energy and the everything that exists between them, like they're right next to each other, yet there's just like years of things they wanted to say and like do and like directions they could have gone. Like you feel that in that moment. Like, that's just incredible. And I would say my second favorite thing about this movie is, and I already told Chris about this off air. They keep saying "wah," you know, "woe" to each other. And my daughter, who's now about 17 months old, says "woe" all the time. And after this movie, I noticed once in a while she does say "wah." You know, she doesn't fully say it. So it's she always says it whenever like something loud happens. You know, if we drop something, she'll just go "wah." It's hilarious, and I just couldn't help but think of that the whole time.
It's adorable,
but it was making me laugh. There's a lot of really funny moments in this movie, like the whole "woe" thing, but also that whole moment where she just keeps going like, "He's so Korean." Like every time she said it, I just like kept laughing harder and harder.
Well, and then the moment where they're cuddling and it's just Arthur's like wrapped around her in a very kind of like fetal clinging on position. It's so dumb, but one of those things you just kind of do with each other. I don't know. It was funny. Oh, one cool detail. I don't know if this was in the interview you read, but they actually kept Teo and John away from each other behind the scenes. So the actors did not meet until the first scene together.
That's great.
So it's not like they got to do a handshake. They didn't do table readings together, nothing like that. So it would be something where Greta would go film with one of them and then go film the next day with like the other of them.
Very theater thing to do.
Yeah. And apparently they felt it. They each talked about how there was a little bit of jealousy. John would be like, how was it with, you know, how was it with Teo? Was he good? Oh, he was good. Okay, cool, cool. And Teo would be like, oh, so you were, okay, you were with John yesterday. Sure. Also, small detail, then we can get into rankings. Celine Song's husband, what's his name? Justin Kurtzky, who, you know, Arthur's based on. It's totally, like, autobiographical. You're like, is that how they met? Yes. He is a screenwriter as well, because it's autobiographical. Like, yes. Like, Arthur is Justin. He wrote the screenplay for the movie Challengers that's coming out.
Oh, yeah.
Which, if people aren't aware of what that movie is, it's Zendaya being this tennis star. But she ends up in kind of a throuple situation with these two other players, I guess.
Yeah.
But then ends up in a relationship with one of them. But there's still the tension with the other one. So Celine Song's husband, I think it's his first film that he has the screenplay for, just happens to be a movie about a love triangle.
Mm. Getting out some feelings there.
Yeah, right. It's cool to see one that's the autobiographical version of things, and then one that seems just purely like I experienced something like this, but we're taking it, you know, as fictional as it gets.
Yeah, it's like Jules and Jim.
Yeah, a launching off point.
All right. So yeah, ranking.
Yeah. I have this, so my rankings are up to 155. All right.
So everybody knows these are the movies we've watched since 2022.
Yeah, it comes up a lot. And even though it's like in the initial paragraph on the page, I still get people being like, you've only watched 150 movies? Like, no. No.
I wouldn't trust thousands. That person's opinion either.
I know that would be insane. So I have Past Lives of the 155 I've watched since, and my list started like July of 2022.
Yeah.
Currently at number 12.
Very good.
But it might end up higher. So it's above The Wailing at 13 and below Beau Is Afraid at 11.
Yeah, I was sitting here.
It's in the, oh, It's in the colossal category.
Oh, nice. I was sitting here wondering, like, if I should push it higher. I think I tend to be this way about, like, A, movies new released, and B, movies I see for the first time. Like, I have trouble pushing them higher. So when I say it's at 79 out of 444 movies, which actually is pretty high, you know, you're in the top fifth at that point. I don't mean to say, like, I don't find it impressive. Like, that 79, that's up there with, like, movies I fucking love. Like, it's above Fast and Furious 6. Like, that alone should tell you how much I like it. And it's right below The Exterminating Angel, which is a movie I love. So it's up there. And I have it ranked number 4 for 2023.
Nice. That's really good.
Yeah. I the further we get into 2023, like, I haven't seen a ton of movies I really love. So this one was a breath of fresh air in that way that, like, I was expecting it to just be okay, and to end up loving it was nice.
Yeah, that's always a wonderful thing. For 2023, I have it at number 2 currently, with Beau Is Afraid at number 1. And then there's going to be some debates. Are we doing the next episode? We're doing what we talked about?
I believe so.
Bottoms?
I believe so.
Okay.
If so I can watch it.
I'm going to be very curious to see where I end up ranking it, because I have it ranked currently, but I'm very uncertain about it. So our conversation is going to play a role.
Okay. Are you going to go watch it again?
Maybe. Okay. I don't know.
It's not the kind of movie maybe you need to see twice.
At least not in, like, a week and a half.
Right. Right. Okay. I look forward to that then. I have... My expectations for this movie are much higher than they were for Past Lives. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, which could be dangerous. Yeah. You know?
I say that as an extreme Superbad fan.
Yeah. Which, I mean, I've been hyping it up to everybody as, like, Superbad meets Fight Club.
Yeah, like an updated Superbad. I guess I, in some sense, I wonder if I'll love it as much just because, like, Superbad really was my generation, and Bottoms feels very not my generation.
Yeah, it's definitely made by people younger than us, but there's something about it that, I don't know. I know there was that other movie that people were comparing to Superbad a few years ago.
Booksmart.
And it just steps on Booksmart.
Yeah, right.
So intensely to really, like, seize that crown as the true heir of Superbad. I'm going to be very curious to see how you feel. Again, pure, like, each episode.
Yes. I mean, I'm pretty open to it. I hope to have fun watching it.
Yeah, I highly encourage anybody that's listened this far into the episode, the three of you, to see Bottoms when you can.
Yeah, we lost everybody when we started talking about Damien Chazelle again.
These guys need to get over it.
Okay, so we've reached the end here, right?
Yeah.
All right, we're at the end here. I think last time we tried this, there was a bit of a delay between our voices. Not our fault. That was a technological problem. So I think this time we're going to get it right. All right, you okay. Ready?
Yes.
Lights?
Camera?
See ya. We did it.
We're almost there.
We did it.
Almost there.